Anthony Alcoholic.
Anthony.
Thank you, Dale, for asking me to share. I've been up here before. It was a couple of years ago. I think it was about like 4 years sober. My sponsor wasn't in the room then, so like I lied my entire story. So now I have to be honest. We were joking about that beforehand. But I will not let a good lie get in the way of a good story, right? All right, so I'm going to identify really quick. So my sobriety date is January 10th, 2015. I have a home group. It's in Charlottesville, Virginia. It's Tuesday night, 7:30. It's Wholesale Miracle Group at Emmanuel Lutheran. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other gentlemen in the program, and I have been through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. All of them. I have done all 12. So I just kind of like jump right into it, right? So we're going to go back in a little time machine. We're going to go back to October 1989. It was a clear night. You know, there was a big bright star in the sky, the star of Nazareth, and this little beautiful baby was born. The CEO of the universe, in case anybody wants to know, that is me. I was born to save the planet and to make sure I can right all the wrongs and the evils in the world. And yeah, good luck. I appreciate that. Yeah, I carried that for a long time. And, you know, I kept banging my head against this brick wall constantly. And like, you know, I was sitting there, I was like 19 years old, and like, this is like my unemployed and unemployable stage, right? Like I'm 19 years old, like, you know, fit, ready for work. And I had been working since I was 16 years old in a hospital. And like, you know, life was really going downhill quickly. And like my dad, we sat down in his basement, one time, cause I went back out. I had like 3 months sober, in his basement. And he sat me down and he was just like, I just don't understand. Why do you keep banging your head against the same brick wall and doing the same stuff over and over again? He's like, you would think you're a smart kid. Like, I mean, you would think that you would learn from your mistakes. And it was just, I couldn't understand it. Right. Like I couldn't understand why I made the decisions that I made. And, you know, going up through school, like, you know, I'm going to stand here and say I had a good childhood, a loving childhood, right? Like my parents did the best that they could, you know, raising me and my sister. And I really struggled in school fitting in. I couldn't understand why. I like to hang out with the older kids. I like to not go to school, skip school a lot. I actually wind up failing high school my senior year twice in a row, right? So like I graduated in summer school in my second summer school year. So like I did 5.5 years of high school, right? And thank God for No Child Left Behind. They just kind of were like, we're done with you, right? Like just going out there and just, you know, figure out the world. And anyway, you know, 16 years old, I got my first job. I was actually in Maryland. I'm from Maryland. 15 to 9 months, you got to work for a man, right? The family friend, she worked in radiology at this hospital in Baltimore. And she was like, I can get you a job there, like a weekend gig, make some money. And I was like, sounds good. You know, I took the job, you know, I really liked it. I liked helping people. I liked the fast paced atmosphere. I liked doing something on the weekends because I hadn't drank yet. Right. Like I wasn't going to parties on the weekends. Like I didn't have a bunch of friends asking me to go out and party and drink all weekend. I was a good kid, right? I came in when the streetlights were on and you know, I watched I Love Lucy at night with my sister and my mom and, you know, ate dinner and went to bed. Didn't do homework, obviously. That's why I failed. But yeah, I mean, it was, I had really fond memories. And then, you know, I'm working at this hospital and I'm doing really well. And, you know, like I said, I really identified and really enjoyed hanging out with older folks. And I met this group of young guys that already graduated high school, 19 years old, and I'm 16. And, you know, they invited me to hang out, right? And they were like, hey, they worked on the weekends. They put 40 hours in on the weekend. It was a weekend option shift, right? So they would, you know, work up 8 on Friday and 2 16s. They would put 40 hours in on a weekend. And I thought that was cool, right? Like, I was like, okay, I'm going to do that too. And here I am, 16 years old, working 40 hours a weekend, and then going into to high school on Monday, tired, right? I was tired. But what they would do is, it was they would party during the week, right? Because they didn't have a weekend, right? There's not much partying, you know, getting home at 11:30 at night, you know, having to get up at 6 in the morning, go back to the hospital, right? So they would party during the week. And like, I remember it was a Wednesday, you know, I was invited out by one of our friends to go play pool. And then we were going to go back to his friend's girlfriend's house. And like, you know, I walked in and I didn't know, like, I was really anxious because like, I knew we were drinking. Right. And like, this was like really like my first time drinking. Now I had like sips of beer here and there. And, you know, I tried a cigarette and didn't like it. But this was like the first time, like this was going to happen. Right. And like, I got invited by cool guys. Right. And like, we're in the basement and it's just this ragtag, whatever you could steal out of the refrigerator, whatever was left over from a previous party. And, you know, I've always been a big boy. Right. There it stood, the Magnum bottle of Sutter Home White Zinfandel. And I was like, that's mine. That's mine for the night. Right. And I got through that. I got through that, that bottle. And what I can now explain today and identify today is I had that like wow feeling, right? Like all of a sudden now I'm funny. There's no more fears of trying to run the planet anymore and making mistakes. I didn't care about what anybody thought of me, right? I was good looking. All the above, right? Like I had discovered this thing that I had been running from and thinking was really bad for like the longest time, right? And, you know, there I am out in the yard running around like this empty bottle of Sutter Home was like a trophy for me. I'm running around in this like little field and like, I'm like holding it up, like, you know, throwing up in a bush and like, this was awesome. Right. And, anyway, pass out. And it wasn't like the next day where I was just like, oh, I'm going to do that again. Right. 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, did it again. 2 weeks later, did it again. 1 week later, did it again. Now I'm drinking during the weeknights, right? Now I'm also getting introduced to other, you know, let's just say mood enhancers. And we're mixing it because, you know, now I can get the same effect quicker, right? School becomes less important. I mean, getting back to that fact again, I failed, right? I failed my senior year of high school. I just didn't show up. I didn't do any work, right? I thought work was really important. I thought school was dumb. Why do I need this, right? I did really well at the hospital until I didn't, right? And it all caught me. Like it was, I started drinking at 16 years old. At 19 years old, I went to my first state-run detox. I went to my mom. I just got fired from the hospital. I just lost a girlfriend. She was like kind of like my first love, right? My grandfather died. And like, there I am just, pour me a drink, right? And that was me, right? Like I drank because all I would do is self-obsess about what am I gonna get? Why was I dealt these cards? Remember when I was, and this is going back far, you know, I can't even believe that some of the memories that I have are burned in my brain. Like I was 2 years old sitting at the top of my grandparents' steps, right? My parents are getting separated. I remember my mom packed all of our clothes in plastic bags and the faded blue Pontiac. I forget what it was. It was old, 1974 Pontiac. You know, real big. There's some folks in this room that probably knows what I'm talking about, but it had a real big trunk. And like, you know, I'm sitting at the top of the steps, 2 years old, asking, why me? Why do my parents have to get divorced? Why do my parents have to get separated? And that was me, right? Like I was always like, pitying myself, right? Like I was always a victim. And again, 19 years old, I'm sitting there and I go to my mom. My mom's sitting out on the porch. I am hungover and I'm starting to like kind of like detox from all the substances that I've just been indulging in for weeks on hand. And I go out to her and I'm like, Mom, I think I have a problem. And she starts bawling, crying, right? She was just like, I've been waiting for this. And I'm like, and her saying that, I was like, what do you mean? Like, well, you know, we've been watching some differences in your behavior, and people have started to say things. And this is what I'm finding out, that it was obvious. Like, my drinking and my behavior and my attitude has become obvious to others around me before it was even obvious to myself. Fast forward a little bit, I got kicked out of that rehab. Within 24 hours, I snuck a cigarette in and somebody snitched on me. I got kicked out of that, and I was off to the races again, right? Like, I wasn't ready. You know, I was 19 years old. I didn't think I really had a problem. I just had to get some separation and some distance away from these substances. And, you know, then I can drink like a normal gentleman, what the book talks about. You know, fast forward, fast forward a little bit. I'm from right outside of Baltimore City, and I go right into the city life, right? Like, I am right in the middle of the trenches. It was a way for me to like finance the lifestyle that I wanted to live, but also be surrounded by the same items and the caliber of people that I wanted to be around. You know, the book talks about sorted people and sorted places, and I never heard that before until I came here, Alcoholics Anonymous, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, oh my God, like, it makes sense. Like, I went to Catholic school growing up and like raised by a good Catholic family, and there I am in the city of Baltimore in crack houses, right? Like, you know, just doing things like that. It's just like how do you get from A to B, right? And I never, you know, again, there I am with my deck of cards. I'm like, well, this might be the hand that I was dealt, right? This just might be the story of my life, right? I'm going to make the best of it. You know, fast forward to, I think I was 21. I got arrested for the first time, or 20 or 21. I got arrested for the first time. My mom and I had gotten into a really bad argument, and I did this flip-flop thing, right? Where like, I'd steal something from my mom, or like, you know, something would come to a head. She'd kick me out, and I could live with my dad for a little bit. And then I'd steal something from my dad, and it come to a head, and then I get kicked out of there. And I would just flip-flop back and forth between mom and dad's house. And my dad didn't want to even talk to me. I hadn't talked to my dad in like a year at this point. And like, my mom and I get into this argument, and I thought, you know, I thought I was really smart. She was like, you have to leave. And I was like, you have to give me 30 days notice because I'm over the age of 18 and I get mail here. I'm technically a tenant. And I thought I was smart. She was, and this was the first time my mom did not fight with me. She said, okay. And she left. For the rest of the day, I'm like, all right, she's out of my hair. And I got good and drunk the rest of that. Well, we get a knock on the door at 2 o'clock in the morning, right? I'm just about to pass out. I get a knock on the door. I'm in my boxers, nothing else. And there are two sheriff's deputies at the door, at my mother's front door. And they said, are you Anthony Slaney? And I said, yes. And they were like, you have to leave the premise. And I was like, at 2 o'clock in the morning. And they were like, yes, right now. So I run downstairs because I had some stuff hidden in my room and just, you know, ingested that. And then my neighbors were having a party. So I went down the street, hid in a bush, waited for them to drive away, partied until like 4 o'clock in the morning with my neighbors, complaining about how crazy my mom is, and then snuck in the back door and went to sleep. Sorry, passed out. At 7 o'clock in the morning, my mom came downstairs to wake me up, and she said, we got to go to court. And I was like, for what? I have done nothing wrong to you. I am the victim in this scenario. And we got into an argument. Again, she didn't argue too much. She said, okay, went upstairs, made a phone call, and boy, that sheriff's deputy must have been right around the corner, because I couldn't get my shoes on and out the door fast enough. And he was flying up my street, and I was like, oh God. And then I acted like I didn't hear him talking to me and kept walking. So that was my first arrest. And, you know, I didn't have any arrests, prior to that. This was like the first arrest that kind of from you know, trouble that I'd kind of really gotten into from like my drinking. I don't have any DUIs. I don't have any, you know, wrecks in a ditch or anything like that. I mean, there's plenty of stories where I could have. I drove back from Philly to Baltimore with one eye one night at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I did one of those like peek out the window, like when I woke up at 2 in the afternoon, like, oh my God, is my car okay? And it was, the car was fine. Anyway, so this is my first arrest, and you know, the jailer comes in to let me out, and he says, okay, you're being released. I was in there for 4.5 hours of literally like a slap on the wrist. They said, your father called and he wants you to call him when you get out of here. And I was like, and I hadn't talked to my dad in a year, and now I got to face that. So I call my dad, I let him know I'm leaving. He comes and picks me up, go to his house. We sit down on the back table. He gives me this sermon and this story. I'm halfway paying attention. I'm saying yes to things just to get the heat off my back and get it behind me, so I'm not homeless. That was like one of my biggest fears, was being homeless, right? And, I got sober about 3 months, 4 months. I was going to join the Navy. That was like the ultimate plan. I wanted to finish pursuing my career to be a nurse. And I figured the United States military would help me out with that, fund it, and straighten me up with a little bit of discipline. Again, I'm searching for things, right? Like, I need discipline. I need different out of my environment, right? I need a new cast of friends. And I started working at this bar down the street and serving tables. And I was making pretty decent money. I had rent of $25 a week. I could not make said rent of $25 a week, every week. For some reason, I wasn't making any money, right? My dad loves me so much, and they just didn't say anything, right? I started drinking again, shift drinks. I discovered shift drinks, that's a thing. And again, sorted people, sorted places. I found the group that liked the party the way that I did. And there we were again, off to the races. I get this job at it's a sprinkler fitting company. I was, my dad was a concrete worker for 20 years and then joined the railroad as part of a union. They were a very, very big union family. My grandfather was in a union. They were like, you need to join the union, right? If you're not going to the military, cause you met this girl, who is now my wife, by the way, cause you met this girl, you need to join a union, right? So join this union, sprinkler fitters union. We did government jobs, so we got randomly drug tested, and I failed. Yet again, another failure. I come to the job. I tell my cousin, I was like, look, I just want to let you know that the test that you sent me for yesterday is going to be positive. And he says to me, why didn't you just tell me? I would have sent you to a different job or just not sent you. I was like, oh, is that easy? Right. But really, you know, it's another thing in my life that I'll talk about later in my story is like, I don't believe in coincidences anymore. Right. Like, there was a reason I kept my mouth shut and I just went and did it because I really needed help. You know, I'm standing there. I'm a 22-year-old man. You know, I'm 6'3", I'm weighing 185 pounds, 183 pounds, depending upon the day, right? I'm like rail thin. You know, people are starting to ask questions like, what's really going on here? I go to ASAP after that positive drug test, and I'm crying in this therapist's office. Like, me and this lady we're crying together, right? Like, bawling. I'm like, I need help. Like, I need to get out. She was like, where do you want to go? I was just like, as far away from Maryland as possible, because I will leave. And I have too many connections. And so she sends me to Las Vegas, Nevada, which I thought was kind of funny at first, right? It was, you know, Vegas. They're sending me to Vegas for rehab. You know, I go to Vegas. I become Captain Sobriety, right? I'm leading the AA meeting in the rehab center. I find myself a nice girlfriend while I'm there. I even led like a little revolt, you know, a little sit-in, old-fashioned sit-in, you know. Two guys got into a fight and watching a movie. They took our movie privileges. I told them that's against our rights. We shouldn't be affected by them. And I had 74 guys sitting outside of this thing for like 30 minutes, and then it was fine. It was over. I wasn't, you know. But anyway, I knew that there was. I'm now starting to believe that something is wrong, right? Or I have something that most people don't. Now I'm still in this belief system that it's, you know, something chemical, right? I'm going to get out. I'm going to go seek therapy, right? I'm going to get the right dose of medications, change my scenery again. And, you know, they suggested go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So this is my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I left rehab after 30 days, after a nice 3-day stint in Vegas on the strip with this new girlfriend. I come back to Maryland and go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It was a meeting very similar to this, had steps on the wall, and I'm sitting there in the crowd, 22, 23 years old. And I'm just looking at it and I see God, 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 God. And I'm like, there's no way, right? Like, in my mind, Alcoholics Anonymous was in churches to try and lead people to religion to bolster their populations because of the fact that they were losing parishioners. That's what I used to think. And that's why I didn't go in that says, if you need help, come here, right? Signs. I would drive by them all the time and mock it and say, yeah, right. You know, it was so Father Nick could get another gold watch, you know? Deacon Nick, Catholic. But I didn't believe that God was going to work it. But listen, this was almost the last house on the block for me. I still thought that maybe a little bit more time and away from drinking, things would change, right? And, you know, not even a week later, there I am again, right? I got enough heat off. My mom let me borrow the car. I'm in the parking lot of Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, drinking, getting all lit up. I'm in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I told her that I had to leave early to help set up. I found that loophole. And I'm nodding out in meetings. And like, the people were so nice there. But you know what they kept saying to me that kept annoying me? Keep coming back. I thought that was the rudest thing on the planet. Like every time, it was like the Southern, like, God bless your heart. Right. You know, like they're like, just keep coming back. And I was just like, why do they keep saying that to me? Right. Cause like, I'm telling them I'm sober. Right. But they're obviously, they're not dumb. Right. Anyway, so I get in touch with my ex-girlfriend. She was my ex-girlfriend because I had stole from her mom. Right. And pawned a necklace because I needed money. And, you know, the steps were in order. I latched onto this amends thing. I'm feeling really good. I immediately call her promptly and apologize for everything. She was like, you know what? I'm out to dinner right now. Can I call you back later? I was like, sure. And just like, lets me have it. Like everything, and I was not ready. I was not ready at all. I got drunk that night. And anyway, so we stay in contact. A couple months later, she was like, she lived in Harrisonburg. I would long distance. We had a long distance relationship previously, and I would travel to Harrisonburg on like a Friday and drive back Monday morning to job sites in like Northern Virginia and DC, right? I'd leave at like 3 a.m. and get there by 6. She knew something was up, and she was like, I moved to Charlottesville. And I was like, I need to get out of Baltimore. So I got a Greyhound ticket. I came down here to Charlottesville for a week, and I fell in love with it. I mean, Charlottesville is an amazing, it's not a hard upgrade from Baltimore City, but there is something special about Charlottesville. I drove around looking for jobs and talking to people. It's a very charming thing. And again, there are no coincidences, right? Like I just felt it deep in my soul. There was something here. And I just felt at peace and at home. 3 weeks later, I found a sober living house, one of the Oxford houses in Charlottesville. I applied and you know, kept pestering them about getting in. 3 weeks later, I told my mom, I was like, hey, mom, I'm moving to Charlottesville. And she was just like, do you need me to help you pack your bag? I was like, oh. So she even went and bought me bags. Like, I was great. She was like, I'll buy you bags. We'll get you a ticket, one-way ticket. You ain't coming back. You'll figure it out. Anyway, again, I came here to Charlottesville. I'm in a sober living home with five other guys that are living sober. And, you know, we're going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And, again, I still am balking on this God thing, this spiritual sickness thing and the spiritual malady thing. And I thought maybe just some, again, time away from friends and almost 200 miles away from home, what could happen, right? And 6 months later, you know, money, property, prestige starts happening. I start getting better and better jobs, right? And Alcoholics Anonymous becomes less and less important. I didn't do an honest and thorough four-step with my sponsor. I just BS'd it in my room for an hour before he came to pick me up just so he wouldn't get mad at me. And I'm sitting there at this red light, and so I'm 29, right? And I'm sitting there, and I just dropped somebody off at work. I just got fired from my job because I accepted another job, right? And I'm sitting there at this red light, and I had two choices: make a right and go back home and just watch HBO and all day and relax, right? And or make a left and go to Baltimore. It just like hit me like that. I was just like, I was like, no. I'm going to go back home. I'm going to white knuckle this thing. I'm going to go back home and just watch HBO. The light turned green. I immediately made that left. I didn't even think about it. It was just like muscle memory, right? I went home. I went all the way. I drove all the way from Charlottesville to Baltimore, got messed up all day, drove all the way back to call my girlfriend to make sure I was back in time before she got off of work so I could have some type of coherent conversation with her. And immediately she caught me. She was just like, why are you slurring? And again, here's my story again, right? So it happened once. I said, I'm done. Like 3 weeks later, I drove to Baltimore again. 2 weeks later, I drove to Baltimore again. 1 week later, I drove to Baltimore again. Now I'm making multiple trips to Baltimore from Charlottesville a week, right? And, you know, car loan companies like to get paid for their assets. And it's not cheap to go to Baltimore multiple times a week and get annihilated. And they repoed my car, came to the office, repoed my car. I became homeless now at this point, right? Like the biggest fear that I had, really homeless. And I'm showing up to work every day in the same outfit for like a week and a half, right? And finally my boss comes up and he's like, is everything good? And I'm just like, and it was like one of those moments where it was just like those God moments where it was just like, I would lie to you straight to your face. You asked me what I had for dinner. I had steak. I would tell you spaghetti. Don't know why, but that's the answer I'll give you. I'd say spaghetti. He asked me if everything was okay. I was like, no, I relapsed. And it was just one of the most honest moments in my life. And he was like, okay, just making sure. And he walked away. I thought I was going to get fired. Nope. Anyway. So I get the car back and you know, it's winter, right? It's cold. I don't want to be homeless. It's cold, right? I'm not a rough and tough outdoorsman, you know, I like warmth and air conditioned in the summer. And, you know, I thought that was enough. And there I am. I got my car back and I'm still driving up to Baltimore, right? I'm still white knuckling it. I'm not doing it 3-4 times a week now. I'm doing it twice. But I'm getting enough while I'm there to come back down here. So it lasts me for 2 days, right? So I'm doing the same stuff. And finally, if there's any sports fans in the audience, January is the playoffs for NFL. And the Ravens are playing Tom Brady in the playoffs. And to go to the Super Bowl. And we are up 2 touchdowns. It's starting to snow. It's like, we got this. We're going to the Super Bowl. I'm super happy, right? Tom Brady comes back and beats us by one. And I'm just so distraught. And you know, my girlfriend comes out and she's just like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to go take the dogs for a walk. I take the dog for a walk and I go out and I get high, right? I go smoke some weed. And I come back in and she smells it and I promptly lied. And then I was like, I'm going to go get in the shower. And I made this like very conversation where it's like this small talk, just to kind of like, I get in the shower and I get out and I'm making this like small talk, like in the other room to like hear her tone, to see if she's still upset with me. Like, what kind of night am I going to have? Am I going to enjoy this or not? Right. And there's silence. And I come out and I look and there's everything on the table. Everything that was in the trunk of my car. It was all hidden, all on the table. And I sat down and this was another one of those moments where it was just like, I had nothing to say. Like, I was completely silent. There was no conversation back and forth between the two of us. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm stuck. And I called my sponsor the next morning. And I was like, look, I need help. I don't know what to do. And on the other end of the phone, it was just like, hey, what meeting are you going to? So I went to a meeting that day. And I just kept going to meetings. And I'd signed up for this responsibility before everybody knew that I was back out for that 4 months. It was one of the jail, taking meetings into the jail. And then like there was my home group. It wasn't a home group then at that point. Like one of the members was leaving out of town and somebody needed to make the coffee. I just had to keep showing up, right? And I understand now when they say that coffee saved lives. Right. It's like in the back of my mind, it was just like, man, I can't do anything. Like if I don't go make coffee, people are going to know something's up. And like, I had to set up and chair the meeting, everything. Right. And I was like, you know, I was doing the steps and it was like 6 months sober. And I'm sitting there in this meeting at Wholesale Miracle. And this guy, right, he starts sharing about why he identifies as an alcoholic. And he talks about the spiritual malady and spiritual sickness. And for some reason, like, you know, I've been to like probably hundreds of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings at this point, multiple rehabs, et cetera. And finally, it was just like, you know, like something went off in my head. It was just like, oh my God, like, I'm not an alcoholic and an addict and bipolar depressive and, you know, sex addict and gambling addict. I'm not. I'm just an alcoholic. I'm just another bum on the bus. And I remember it was like so profound. I went home to my girlfriend. I was just like, babe, you're not going to believe this amazing meeting. I was like, I am just an alcoholic. And she like kind of looked at me and chuckled and she was like, no shit. You know, like, you know, can I show you like the last like 2 years of my life? But God bless her. She like, you know, we trudged through the mud together. And like the book talks about like finally, the fire was lit up underneath me, right? And then I got on fire, right? Like I did an honest and thorough four step. I sat in the car with my sponsor, read it. I got honest about some things that I really was thought that I didn't think were that serious, right? And then we moved on. Even if I didn't believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, I just said yes, and I would move forward. Right? I would at least give this thing the honest try. This is now the last house on the block for me. I have no way out. You know, and moved on to 8 and 9. I don't have any good stories about 8 and 9. Nothing crazy there. No crazy 8 and 9 stories. And then we went to 10, 11, and 12, right? And like, you know, I finally started feeling the peace that bottle of Sutter Home gave me for the first time when I go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, right? Like I would joke with people that were like normal drinkers and it's just like, you don't drink. Like, no, I go to AA meetings and I get the same relief. And they're like, what? Like, truthfully, like I get this like little, when we say that prayer, we hold hands and we say that prayer at the end of the meeting. I take that deep breath when it says, you know, pray for those in and out of the rooms. I take that deep breath and it is like the first, it was like the first drink of liquor that I ever took in my life. It's the best feeling on the planet. I'm going to fast forward a little bit. So I got sober. Now, sober life is not always easy. It can be very hard. especially for me, because I am the CEO of the universe. I was born October 1989 with the Star of Nazareth in the right position. And I didn't, you know, I gave my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, a higher power. I'd pray every night, right? And here I am, 7.5 years sober. Just going to paint a picture really quick. 7 years sober, 7.5 years sober. Every material thing that you guys can probably think of in terms of like a successful business career is there, right? Like it all showed up really quick, right? And I'm sitting in my basement of my brand new house that we just built, sitting on my couch, completely miserable. And drinking is not an option to me. I mean, completely miserable. I'm thinking about killing myself, right? Like it is bad, dark. I'm like rageful to the point of brand new house cabinets, took a lighter, a big lighter. I'm so angry. And I mean, I used to play baseball back in the day and I probably hit about 80 miles an hour with this lighter, threw it right through the cabinet door, a big lighter, right? So it had some velocity. Just completely just not at peace, right? And you talk about restless, irritable, and discontented, right? And I understood what restless, irritable, discontented was then at that point. I also understood what pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization looked like at that point. And what stemmed from that is I knew I needed help again. Right. And it didn't come from like diving right back in. I mean, I dove right back into Alcoholics Anonymous. I picked up some sponsees, you know, I call my sponsor more often, pray, but there was a piece that I was missing, right? I was still a little bit miserable. It was getting a little bit better, but I was still a little bit miserable. And there was a piece that I was missing. I'm going to give you guys a picture of the last 6 months of last year in a very short time capsule. Okay. September, my dog jumps off the back of our deck and paralyzes himself from the waist down. Doesn't sound like anything. I mean, it sounds crazy, but like now we're talking about like 3 months of rehab, changing his diaper, you know, like taking him to specialized dog people, neurologists for dogs. I didn't even know they existed, but there are neurologists for dogs and MRIs, CAT scans, all everything. And so that happened. 2 weeks later, my dog that's paralyzed is sitting in my birthday. My wife arranges for some of my friends to come and my mom comes down. She has a heart attack in my house upstairs, right? Wow. The market, I mean, we all know about the market. If you're listening to the news, like the market was going down, right, really quickly. And my business is very driven on what the market does, right? So business is going down. So you have nonstop, I have staff, right? Like fear is like, to the highest level. We find out we're pregnant again. I have an 8-month-old baby, and we find out we're pregnant again. Happy stuff, right? Not happy. Talking about fear level to the highest, like, oh my God, I'm still learning this baby. What are we gonna do, right? I get sued by a past client. I had to settle with her $15,000. Had to pay her. What else? Oh. And then one December night, to just top it all off, I decided, I'm not going to tell you guys what road it is because it will take a while just describing it. But there's a road in Charlottesville. It kind of looks like a track, and I have a very fast car. And I was doing about north of 125 miles an hour. And I lost traction and left the road. And I missed everything catastrophic. The guardrail I missed by about 12 inches. I don't know if you guys have ever seen crash videos of a car hitting a guardrail north of 100 miles an hour. It is not good. And then going off the side of the road, which has about a 20-foot embankment. I missed the rock structure off the side. I missed every tree going down. And I landed there with my car obviously totaled. I mean, it didn't survive. I opened the door and got out of the car. And this whole time, something new came into my life. after event number two, after the dog and work, etc. I remember after the dog happened, I was like freaking out. It's like the morning, I'm getting ready for work to go meet people and stay positive. And I'm just like, this is $15,000 right there. $15,000 day right there. And like this, that's just my mindset, right? And I knew I needed help. And like, for some reason it clicked in my head. It was just like, you know what? I really need to pray for grace. Cause I've been hearing, I've heard about it, you know, from other people. And I need some grace right now. I need help because this is a lot of stuff. I mean, my wife and I, we would joke, we would say, you know, when's the next thing going to happen? Like after like two or three, it's like, what's up for next week's agenda? You know, like it was just like wild. And, you know, this crazy thing happened is, you know, I kept praying for grace and I didn't get angry and I didn't get resentful and I didn't get rageful. And I left the house in the morning more grateful. And people in Charlottesville now can drive right. And all my clients now seem to follow directions, right? And everybody seems to be able to do it okay without me. And what I realized was, and I didn't come up with this, I'm not that smart, but I heard this from a speaker. What I realized what was happening was, there I am at 7.5 years sober. And what I was doing every night is I was praying every night. I prayed every night religiously. I can tell you 4 nights in 7.5 years, I did not pray. And it's because I literally was so tired, I just passed out. And I felt like crap in the morning about it. But anyway, I would take God and I would put him on the shelf and I'd go operate throughout my day because I'm the CEO of the universe. And then I would come back and I'd say, all right, God, we did good today. You know, let's say prayers so I have a nice sleep and then go to bed. And because of those instances, I had what I describe as the second surrender, right? Like I had that first surrender at Alcoholics Anonymous. Whatever you guys were talking about was going to work and I was going to stay away from, I was going to be removed from the obsession of drinking. But I didn't understand that unmanageable piece, the second half of it, right? Like, when I was going through all this, alcohol wasn't even a thought in my mind, right? That's the alcoholism side of it, right? That I'm an alcoholic. But that my life has become unmanageable is the second piece. That was the second surrender for me, right? And the more that I gave up, and the more that I surrendered, the stronger that connection got. And that the fact that I'm starting the morning off now, everybody talks about, you know, I felt bad that I wasn't getting on my knees in the morning to pray. So I just wouldn't pray, right? So I started praying and my entire life changed. We're going to fast forward to January of this year. Nothing crazy has happened, right? I had like a solid month and a half of non-craziness. And my wife and I, we're about to go to bed. She turns over and she says, she looks at me and she says, hey, before you go to bed, I just want to say, I don't know what's changed, but something has changed in you. She was like, your entire life is like a whole 180 degrees. And she was like, I'm just going to be honest with you. Like, I started seeing a therapist about 7 months ago and our first meeting was talking about, I think I might want to leave my husband. And like, she was just like, but I don't think that way. And gave me a kiss and rolled over. And I was like, wait a second. Right? You can't just say that. Right. And just like, you know, we have to, you know, I want to talk about it. Right. And he's just like, no, but I wouldn't blame her. Right. Like I was, you know, like what sitting in that basement in the dark, right. Is just, it's so like descriptive of my entire life. Like this was, I don't deserve this. I was dealt this. Why me? Why can't everybody do it my way? And I had to have those events from last year, you know, beat me down enough because I'm strong-willed and beat me down enough to the point where I have this second surrender where I'm literally on my knees yet again in sobriety, 7.5 years in sobriety, right? Like I'm going out of town speaking and like sponsoring guys, right? I'm not really doing it. And finally, boom, there it is in my face. And it's like, we talk about a white light experience. I was dropping my daughter off, right? And this is how freeing it is. I don't know if anybody's ever had this experience, and you can call me kooky all you want. But we were talking, my wife and I were talking in the morning, getting the baby ready to go take her to daycare. And I mentioned the words, the lyrics of this one song, and it said Hallelujah in it, right? And she was like, oh, I love that song. I wasn't even actually thinking of that song. I was like, oh, no, that's a good song too. So I was like, I'm going to listen to that. I drop her off. I'm listening to Hallelujah. I'm literally sitting there feeling the presence of my higher power driving down the highway. I'm crying like a baby, right? Like, I mean, bawling crying, right? Just saying, looking up, saying prayer, saying thank you. Thank you, Lord, right? Because it was freedom. That's why I was crying. Because I was finally free from every thought process that I ever thought about myself, every negative feeling that I ever thought about myself, anything that I felt like I could or could not do, it didn't matter in that moment. I'm literally free from any thought process there possibly was. And that was a white light experience for me. And earlier in my story, I was talking about coincidences. There are no coincidences. If you guys are bored tonight and want some reading material, go look up the survival statistics of car accidents above 100 miles an hour. It's less than 1%. Less than 1%. There is no coincidences. I am here for a reason. My ego needed to be smashed. Just like in the beginning, the idea that I presently am or will be a normal drinker had to be smashed. And that's what it did to me. All those events, smashed. I thought I was so high and mighty, 30 years old, top of the world, right? People talking about me, things like that. Like, and then God was like, here you go. See how you can stop this, you know? You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life in multiple times in my life. And I owe everything to Alcoholics Anonymous and my higher power. I'm going to say God. I'll just put that out there. I'm just going to say God. It's just easier for me to say God. I believe in God. It is all because of this program and God that, number one, I'm sober today. Number two, I'm alive today. And number three, that I am not standing up at this podium anymore saying things and not actually doing them. I am an actual member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which means I participate fully now instead of just a visitor when I came here and just took this thing as an a la carte buffet. I need a little bit of this and a little bit of that right now just to get me through. But now I'm no longer a visitor. I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't say that if you called me at 3 a.m. I would answer, but other than that, I'm a full participant in this program. So thank you for letting me speak tonight. Thank you guys.